To say that I'm going to do something slightly different to what I had planned is a bit of an understatement. However, here's the sermon I was going to preach, but I'm preaching in 2 weeks' time. That wasn't prepared, but it is now, because I just felt we've had a fairly major kind of theme unpacked quite a lot this morning. Thank you, Sue, for that. And I just feel to change the focus to something completely different, it just doesn't feel right. So there's time to come back to what I was going to preach about this morning, which was to dip into another bit of the wisdom literature that we're looking at the Old Testament for the moment. But I'm going to do instead, I'm going to try and follow up with a shorter sermon and just follow up a little bit, if I may try and do that, Sue, with what you shared with us a moment ago. And just to lead us into that, I'm going to read a few verses from the back end of Matthew 28. And those of you who know Matthew's gospel will know this. It's called the Great Commission. Almost, not quite, but almost Jesus' final words on earth, advice, direction to his disciples. Almost his very last words on earth. So it's interesting what he chose to say. You know, you get these deathbed sort of words, you know, kiss me hardy. No, that's not relevant. But, you know, what people say just before they peg it, you know. Well, this is more or less what Jesus had to say. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. That's interesting. After the resurrection, some doubted still. And Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." So here in the story of the gospel and the story of the nascent church, there's quite a turning point here, isn't there? Quite a turning point. What's going to happen now? We've had this saving death, which would have gone pretty well unnoticed, unrecorded, unremarked upon, had it not been for the resurrection. Loads of people got crucified, of course, throughout Roman times. And no one thinks of them, or hardly any of them are remembered now. But what happened afterwards for Jesus meant that his crucifixion has really, literally, shaped the shape of the world. So here we're at quite a turning point. What's going to happen next? Liz and I are in the process of planning a cycling holiday in June. And part of it is going to be cycling along the Normandy coast and taking in some of the D-Day sites. It's the 80th celebration of the D-Day landings. So we hope that's going to be really interesting. And that was a crucial day. It was all or nothing, really, wasn't it? There'd been 2 years at least of immense preparation, gathering of men and material and intelligence and so on. But it was really all on that day. And if you know the story, the weather wasn't good and it was touch and go whether it would happen or not. And if they delayed it even for 24 hours, the element of surprise was going to be lost. It was a crucial turning point. The outcome of the war quite possibly hung in the balance on that day. Well, we know what happened. And really, the future of the church, the future of the gospel. People didn't talk about Christianity as such in those days, but the future of faith, as we know it, was in the balance on that day when Jesus met the 11 disciples. And he told them to go to Galilee. Why Galilee? Familiar territory, I imagine. Familiar territory. It had not been a happy experience in the main in Jerusalem. So they retreat, a sort of a tactical retreat to Galilee. And there they were, more or less, in their comfort zone. But little did they know that they weren't going to stay there for long. And here we are, at the early years still of the 21st century. And I think we're at a bit of a turning point too. Churches are closing as fast, not quite as fast, but almost as fast as pubs. And that's a bit of a disaster, isn't it? And churches are declining. There are some wonderful exceptions, and I hope that we're humble enough to look at those and learn. What are they doing to commend the gospel? What are they doing in their corporate life, in the way they talk about Jesus, the way they present Jesus? Not all churches are declining, but most are. And the church in the West is at something of a turning point. And I think if we're prepared just to stay in the comfort zone, probably, who knows, in 20 or 30 years' time, this church, healthy congregation this morning, in 20 or 30 years' time, what will it be like? It might be very different. It might not even exist if we are happy to stay in the comfort zone. The disciples went to Galilee, but there they were only going to be temporarily. They would soon move out. I'm puzzled. You know, verse 17. They worshipped Jesus, but some doubted. And I'm thinking, crikey, they've seen the resurrected, they've touched the resurrected Jesus, but they're still doubtful, some of them. But then, it doesn't take much to give us the collywobbles, does it? If someone said to you, I want you to share your faith with three people this week. Don't know about that. That might give us the collywobbles. So, yeah, we have faith. But are we going to doubt what Jesus goes on to command the disciples to do? I remember a little while ago reading about Billy Graham. And reading about his spiritual ancestry. Not who his mum and dad were and who his aunts and uncles and granddad were, but who were those who ultimately were responsible for bringing him to faith. And it's a long story. It goes back about 100 years. And it began with a guy called Mordecai Ham, who taught in a Sunday school. And a waif and stray called Billy Sunday came to faith. And after that, I'd have to go back and check it. But Billy Sunday brought somebody else to faith. And that brought somebody else to faith. And that brought somebody else to faith. And Billy Graham came to faith about 95 years later. And Billy Graham, of course, has brought thousands of people to faith. But little did Mordecai Ham know, teaching in the Sunday school, what would happen. Little did Billy Sunday know what would happen. And, of course, the story goes on. We no longer have Billy Graham with us, but his son, Franklin Graham, leads this organization, Samaritan's Purse, which brings relief and medical help and sustenance to people all across the world, many of whom are in conflict zones and suffering greatly. So you never know, do you? You never know who you share your faith with, what's going to happen next. And the disciples weren't to know when Jesus said to them, right, the talking's over. You've got to start doing it now. There are only 11 of them. And the Roman Empire was still so vast and so unwelcoming to anything other than the worship of the Roman gods. I mean, it's a wonder they did it, actually, don't you think? 11 against something like 95 million who worshipped other gods. But they had a go. They had a go. So Jesus came to them and said this, and this is interesting. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And if you've never read this before, you kind of expect Jesus to say, all authority has been given to me. Now, you trusted 11 friends, I'm giving the authority to you, so out you go. You kind of expect that's what's going to happen. But he doesn't hand his authority over. He just says, all authority has been given to me, therefore, go and make disciples. So he doesn't give them his authority. He actually does something much, much better and far more important. He goes with them by his Spirit. He's not sending them out alone. I'm sure those of you who have been in your working lives, you've seen conflict, and the boss is the boss, we know that. But the boss doesn't always have authority, does he? You know, the foreman or whoever, the charge hand who works on the floor with you, who knows how to handle people and situations, he's the one with authority. Theoretically, the guys up top have it. But often, everyone just ignores them. What's George telling us to do? He's got authority. And Jesus doesn't give them his authority. He does something better. He goes with them. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. So this isn't rocket science. Because all we've got to do, if we now count ourselves amongst this little apostolic band, is we've simply got to tell other people what Jesus has told us. Well, we know that, don't we? We don't have to have clever arguments. We don't have to convince people about this or that. We just have to tell them what we know. Tell them what we've been told. Share what others have shared with us. Keep it simple. Teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. I think it probably would be unrealistic to expect most of us, that there are some people, they're terribly outgoing and self-confident, and they'll talk to anybody about Jesus, any place, any time, anywhere. Most of us are a bit, we find that a bit daunting, I think, if we're really, really honest. And me too, I count myself as one of that band. But I think what Jesus is saying here is, we don't have to know everything. We don't actually have to know very much. We just have to tell people what Jesus has done for us and pass on what we've learned. And as I think Sue said towards the end of her address, then you leave it with God. We don't know what's going to happen to it, what's going to happen to them. Some will respond and some won't. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. I think we'll leave it there for this morning. And if you were coming expecting something different, well, come back in 2 weeks' time. You'll get that then.